This is the Eastern Palliative Care Show. And on the line, I've got with me Eastern Palliative Care volunteer Helen. You've got two roles with EPC. One is biographer and the other is in bereavement.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, now we've had a biographer on an earlier show, but it's always good to get more than one side to something. So we'll talk about the biography first. But even before we get into that, we want to know about Helen. We know that currently you're volunteering in those two roles with EPC, but how did you get there? What was your journey to getting to that stage?
Well, a combination. I work for myself.
Yeah.
And getting older and winding down. So I was sort of on the lookout for what I would do in semi-retirement. In the meantime, I became a carer for my older sister.
Yeah.
And it was through that that I first came across EPC. They didn't come in for very long, but what I saw of them, and that was primarily the nurses and the family support people,
yeah,
I was really taken with their dedication and their gentleness. And I thought, after my sister died, I was quite touched that they sent me this beautiful card offering me any services that I would like to take up and, you know, wishing me the best. And I thought, However, a few days or a few weeks later, I saw an ad in the paper.
Yeah.
Advertising for volunteers for EPC. So I thought, great. So I applied, but was told at that stage that their policy was if you had been recently bereaved, well, they usually like to wait a bit.
Yeah.
So it was a little while after that that I went back to them and was taken on, did my training, and I've enjoyed it ever since.
Yeah.
That was about seven or 8 years ago, I guess.
Okay, so you've been with them for a fair time.
Yes, I have, yes.
Do you find there's other volunteers who've been with you, with them for that amount of time or longer that are still there?
Oh, yes. Yes, there are. There's quite a few volunteers that have been well over 10 years with them.
Do you volunteer with other agencies or other groups as well as with the EPC?
No, not really. I, as a hobby and as another interest, I do Tai Chi.
Yep.
And part of that, I take a volunteer class for the Think Pink Cancer Ladies.
Oh, okay, yep.
So, but no, EPC is my main people that I work as a volunteer for.
Yes, and you got onto them because of your own experience with them, yeah.
Well, that was where I started, but talking to people around the traps, they're just an excellent organisation to volunteer with. You get lots of ongoing training, so much support, and this sounds awful saying it's quite a lot of fun, but it is because you meet people from all different walks of life.
Yeah. Yeah, they do seem to have a very good handle on looking after their volunteers. Every single one I've spoken to has mentioned the same thing. They get well cared for, lots of training on tap. They get contacted all the time about how they're going. So that's probably a very good thing considering the roles that are available with EPC. Can be quite quite emotional. How do you handle the emotional side of what you go through as a volunteer there?
I don't generally have a problem at all. I mean, obviously I've got other interests. As I say, the support is always there. If I feel, you know, somewhat down or concerned about something, it's just a matter of picking up the phone. Sometimes even I don't even have to do that by sending the email after a visit.
Yeah.
The coordinators pick up that I might be feeling a bit down and will call me.
Yeah.
So I guess the thing is that it makes me realise and appreciate the things that I have in my life.
Yes,
so I think that is a definite benefit to the roles that I do.
Yeah, and they've obviously got a good name in the way they look after all their volunteers.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
Yes, that's where you're at. This is the Eastern Palliative Care Show with Greg Carrick, and I'm talking with volunteer Helen, who does a couple of different roles with EPC, and one of them is biographer. And that's where Helen would go out and sit with people and get a bit of their life story to put together in words and even as a book. So, Helen, when you do that role, how long do you actually have with them?
Generally, we would spend an hour a week with them.
Yeah.
And then we'd come home and type up, you know, the transcript and possibly, you know, send some emails back and forth if you don't understand something. But yes, generally it's only an hour a week that we're actually with them.
Yeah.
And of course now, with COVID, that's been on the telephone.
Yes, yeah, doing things remote.
Yes.
Now, when they tell their story, do you find they do things sort of organise their life by date or by sections of their life?
Not at all. I think the very first client I had did precisely that. He started at the beginning and he went through chronologically all the way through. I think he has been the only one.
Yeah.
The majority of them will tell you something and then it'll be like a jump of many years. And so, you know, that's fine. We work with that. We just, you know, collate it all and put it together. I mean, realising that these people are very ill, you can't expect them to be all very logical. And then, of course, some people don't necessarily want a chronologically ordered story.
Yeah.
They just want to put in little bits about this and that and so on. So they're all different. They're all very, very different.
Yes. Do you find some sort of insist that, oh, this bit is very, very important, it must go in compared to the rest of what they've told?
Personally, I haven't found that too much. There has been a couple of instances where those sorts of things arose. Some of it possibly not the best to go in.
Yeah.
So you have to sort of tiptoe around a bit and suggest that maybe it could be put in a different fashion.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases too, right when you get to the very end, they will tell you to take it out.
All right.
It's almost as if they need to tell this, that part of their story and get it out of their system.
Yeah. Okay. And then you collate all the information you're given over the weeks, and then they get a sample to read through and okay?
That's right, yeah, we put it all together. We collect photographs and, you know, certificates and anything else that they want to put in. We discuss with them what a title might be, and once we've done all of that, we put it all together, and then it gets printed and we present it to them.
And you have their input solely, or do other family members or carers like to chime in and add things?
Once again, it really depends on the client. Sometimes, yes. In some cases where, and I have had some, where the other party wants to, you know, say something.
Yeah.
In which case I sort of put it in italics or something like that.
Yeah.
Just so that it's their words.
Yeah.
The whole idea is basically that it goes, the story follows the lines of that person talking. So for any of their loved ones later on can pick it up and read it and know that that's the way, you know, he or she used to speak.
Yeah.
So when you've got a third party, if, you know, you've really got to distinguish because the it changes.
Yeah. Now, do you find that when you've collated the stories and given it back to them for approval, do you ever have times where the family might say, oh, I never knew that, you never told us that?
Oh, many, many, many times.
Yes?
Yeah, many times. I've done a couple, actually, where I've also gone along to the funeral, and they've used that, the family have used their biography as part of the eulogy.
Oh, right.
And they've stood up there and sort of said, you know, we didn't know that. So it's, yes, very, very often that will come out.
Wow, that's very powerful.
Yes, yeah, very powerful.
Also quite a privilege to be able to have that trust and respect when the person's telling stuff, that histories that they might not have recalled to anybody else.
Yes, I think that's one of the huge benefits from doing that, that you come away, well, I personally come away thinking, this person is a complete stranger and I'm a complete stranger to them, and yet they trust me implicitly to tell me their life story. That's very, very rewarding. Yeah. Very rewarding for me.
Yeah, that's excellent. They also supply old family photos or things as well to go into the finished book at the end.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
This is the Eastern Palliative Care Show, and I've got Helen talking on the phone. We've been chatting about one of her roles, which is biographer, but going to start talking now about her second role, probably a bigger role, and that is with bereavement. Now, Helen, we haven't had someone talking from EBC about bereavement before, so you're the first. To get into that role, what sort of training was provided so that you could be a part of the bereavement process?
Well, a lot of this is covered in basic training that we do right from word go.
Yeah.
And then if you wanted to move into that role, they had further training, pretty much sort of, you know, what you should and shouldn't do, pretty much the same as before. Leave your judgment at the, you know, the door and show empathy, that yeah. sort of thing. So pretty basic, you know, common sense stuff, yeah. really, I suppose, yes.
Now, they do have trained bereavement counsellors on staff at EPC, which isn't your role. You're in a different area of the bereavement process. So what does that entail?
Okay, so this is several different things. As far as the information sessions,
yeah.
they are run by the bereavement counsellors. So the volunteers are there to greet the people, show them in, show them where the toilet is, help make the cups of tea, and generally support the people there. There's usually three of us on deck for any information session.
Yeah.
And this is really where EPC do it correctly. There'll be one person at the beginning outside in the street greeting them.
Yeah.
There'll be another person inside when the lift opens, taking them in, sending them into the room. And then the third person usually help within the session, where they'll sit on a chair and the bereavement counsellors will have a conversation with them about their own bereavement.
Okay.
And that's really quite powerful, because all of these people sitting in the information, it's generally only a short period of time since their loved one has died.
Yeah.
So to listen to a volunteer with the organisation talk about their loss is really beneficial.
Yeah.
And you see the people then opening up a little bit and asking questions and even talking to one another.
Okay. So the picture I'm getting is these bereavement sessions are held at the EPC buildings, and
yes.
they're group sessions. So there might be a number of people who have just lost one of their family or loved ones, and they come along as a group to a bereavement session. They're welcomed into EPC, settled in, looked after, and then a group bereavement session starts with one of these trained counsellors.
That's right. And the counsellor goes through all the issues, all the different feelings that they may be experiencing, the physical side of things. They're given literature, obviously, to read. So, yes, that's the way they go. Unfortunately, of course, we haven't been able to have those this year.
Yeah, with all the COVID, everything has changed.
That's right, yes. That's one part of the bereavement.
Yeah. All these parts are voluntary, aren't they? You know, people can choose whether they need to go through this or not.
Oh, yes, yes. And usually at the information session, they're told about the other things, like walking through grief.
Yeah.
And that will be a group of people will just meet somewhere with the volunteers, and they'll just do a short walk and then perhaps have coffee afterwards.
Okay.
Sometimes they don't talk. Sometimes it's just the mere thing of being with people and going for a pleasant walk.
Yeah.
But a lot of people take that up. And then, of course, is the companionship. This is probably a little bit more definite.
Mm-hmm.
As in, some people want it, some people don't. I guess the prime thing here is that you've got perhaps a very stereotyped family. The man has always paid all the bills, done all the banking, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he dies, and the female is floundering.
Yeah.
The other side, of course, is the woman dying, and she's always done all the cooking and inside things.
Yeah.
So the companionship role could be a practical thing like that, to actually go in and just assist the person with the difficulties that they're having in those realms. Other times it could simply be someone to talk to. And from my experience with the ones that I've done, that has been exactly it. They've perhaps had some issues that I can't talk to the rest of the family about, because it would probably be disloyal. So to have a stranger there where they can just speak their mind, it seems to be very liberating for them.
Yeah.
And once they've come around to trust you enough to tell you that, it seems like they can be off and moving on with their life.
It's interesting, so your two roles as a biographer, you're concentrating and looking after the person who is at a sort of end of life stage, and then afterwards the bereavement role is looking after the people who have just lost that person.
That's right. Yes, that's right. It is. And it is quite different. Once again, from my personal perspective, it's fascinating to learn how there are so many different attitudes from people to death and dying.
Yeah.
And how different people deal with different things.
And your role there is to be a pair of eyes and ears while the bereavement counsellors do the sort of heavy-duty stuff in these sessions. You're there to watch and pick up on all these cues that people might be giving, so that you can then say to the counsellor, well, this person's having a bit of trouble here.
That's exactly right, yes.
The empathy side that you mentioned earlier would obviously play a very big part in that, because you would be really switched on to the people that you've been dealing with and understand, even just by simple body language, what's going on.
Yes, yeah. And I guess as each you do another session after another session, you start to become very aware of the different people's attitudes.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I see, I've noticed with it, is that it is so beneficial to people. In these information sessions, we stop midway and have a coffee.
Yeah.
And the people, when they come in, are very subdued, but after a while, you see them talking in the coffee break with each other.
Yeah.
And it is just this need to talk about it, because I think, with death, sometimes once you've buried the person, it's sort of like, well, now get on with your life, and everybody goes back to their normal way. So some of these bereaved people lose the chance to talk about talk about it. And this is what I see happening at some of these information nights, that people will talk about, their loss.
Yeah.
To each other, not in an open forum, but to each other while they're having a coffee. And I think this is the idea with the talking, the walking through grief too. Some people will, make an attachment to somebody and start chatting to them.
Yeah. Grief process can take people years sometimes, so being able to let people know, educate them in how to get through those stages would be very important.
Yes.
This is the Eastern Palliative Care Show, and I'm talking with Helen about some of her roles, and one of them was bereavement. And Helen, after you've done both those roles, you've sat with people, taking their biographies to produce a book of their life, and then the family gets that, and the person passes away, and then you're dealing with the bereavement sessions with the family. When that's over, all this help to them, how about yourself? What sort of debriefing is available to an EPC volunteer who goes through this?
Well, there is always debriefing available at any time, just by mere question of picking up the phone and speaking to somebody.
Yeah.
We also have our own individual volunteers, so yeah. I'm in a network of 7 other people, and we meet regularly. So if, you know, we want to talk about something that totally disturbed us, this is a confidential area to speak in. So they're probably the main issues that are available to you for debriefing.
Yeah.
From my perspective, I haven't had too much of an issue with anything that I've come across, that Crystal hasn't been able to help, or just talking to somebody else about.
Yeah. So it's sort of like a pick your own level of debriefing help there, depending on how you feel.
Yes, that's right. And I think too, we all have our own individual ways of dealing with stress or, you know, unhappy thoughts or what have you, be that coming home and digging a great big hole in the garden, yep. or sitting listening to music, or having a bath by candlelight with a glass of wine. We all have our ways of debriefing.
Yep.
And I guess they're the things that we do.
Hmm. Well, it sounds absolutely fascinating. And once again, it's brought out the amount of organisation and detail that EPC have in looking after their volunteers in the different roles. So that's really good to know. And any listeners out there who are interested in following up the various volunteer roles with EPC, just go to the website, which is epc.asn.au, and all the information's there, and contact details, of course, if you want to follow that up any further. So thank you again, Helen. It's been a marvellous session and really interesting. I've never met a volunteer in the bereavement side before with EPC, so that was really, really interesting what you do. And with COVID restrictions lifting off more and more, the different roles with EPC will open up a bit more, and you'll be able to do a bit more normal volunteering with them.
Hopefully, yes, that will be the case. And thank you, Greg, for the good interview. Thank you.
No worries, Helen. Thank you very much.
Okay,
this is Yarra Valley FM 99.1.